राधाकुंडं गिरिवरं राधिकमधावशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रतीक्षया श्रीगुरुं तन्न तस्मै पञ्चकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः निखिलाश्रुतिमालैरत्नमालयति निराजितपदपङ्कजन्त आजिमुक्तकुलैरुपश्यामनं परितष्टं हरिणं संश्रयामि अनारपितचरिं चिरात् करुणयावतीर्णाकलः समार्पयितुमुन्नतज्वलरासं सुभक्तिश्रियं हरिपुरतः सुन्दरादीर्तिकदम्बसन्दीपितः सदा हृदये कन्धरे स्फुरतो वासचिनन्दनः अजानुलम्बिता भुजो कनकावदतो सङ्कीर्तनैकपितरो कमलायतक्षो विश्वाम्बरो द्विजावरो जुगधार्मपाल वन्दे जगत्प्रियकरो करुणावतारो नादिनिशक्तिस्वरूपाय गौरङ्गचोरिदाय च भक्तशक्तिप्रदनाय गदाधर नमस्तुते हे कृष्णकरुणा सिन्धुदीनाबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपीकान्त राधाकान्त नमस्तुते राधे वृन्दवनादिशे करुणमृतवाहिनी कृपया निजपादब्जा दर्शन् मह्यं प्रदीयतम् भक्त्या विहीनाय अपराधलक्षये क्षिप्ताश्चाकमादितरङ्गमाध्ये कृपामयि त्वं शरणान्तपानं वृन्दे नमस्ते शरणारविन्दं वृन्दे नमस्ते शरणारविन्दम् श्री सचिनंदन गौर हरि की जय श्री श्री गौर निताय की जय श्री हरि नाम प्रभु की जय श्री श्री राधा मनमोहन राधा गोविंद देव राधा गोपीनाथ जी की जय श्री नृसिंह भगवान की जय भक्त प्रहलाद महाराज की जय श्री नृसिंह चतुर्दशी की जय गौर भक्त वृंद की जय गौर प्रेमानंद हरि So, Dandavat to all of you for now. Nice to be back here once again in the Harmony Collective. As I was telling today in the morning, as Deva Mahaprabhu mentioned, Facebook reminded me there's some purpose to Facebook after all. So it reminded me that two years ago was the first time I had the good fortune to come here. And it was a very beautiful experience, and it was just the beginning of a journey without return, so to say. I mean, with constant return, but without return in another sense. So I'm very happy to be today and to be arriving on a special day like Nrisimha Chaturdasi. Very special day for all of us, for me in particular as well. So a few words on that, like with any celebration of the appearance of Bhagavan. Bhagavan is unlimited, his qualities are unlimited, his names are unlimited, Ananta in every possible direction. So if we are to speak about a day like Nrisimha Chaturdasi, it can be spoken from unlimited angles and perspectives, and there is no end to what we can say about what we are celebrating today. That's, I will say, why Mahaprabhu is famously known as hearing Prahlad Charit or the activities of Prahlad in Nrisimha Lila 100 times and from the lips of Gadadhar Pandit. And that's a separate conversation, why specifically Nrisimha Dev. But I would say in general, he was shown with this, the endless possibilities to relish the unlimited pastimes of the Lord. And so he will hear the whole quote unquote description of the Leela, and he will go again. No. Let's not go to the eighth canto, let's go back to the seventh and let's go again. Prahlad Charit, with Dhruva Charit, and so on and so forth. So it is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that every time that Bhagavan performs an action, it has multiple purposes. So every time that God does one thing, it's many things are happening at the same time. So that means that today it seems that we are celebrating one thing, Nrisimhadev appearing, but many things are being accomplished. Many things, therefore, could be celebrated a day like today. For example, today we could celebrate, if we want to take the whole background of the Nrisimhalila, we could celebrate Bhagavan's desire to taste Vira Rasa, for example. How to say in English? Chivalry?
Chivalry.
Chivalry, the mode of chivalry. God wants to have a good fight. Why not? Who are we to deprive him of tasting that particular mood? So we can celebrate that. No? God wants to have a nice fight, but he can only experience that with his devotees. And we can celebrate Jaya and Vijaya offering themselves. We can offer you a good fight. Mm-hmm. But you cannot do that as my devotees. So you have to appear as demons. So we can have a good fight. And they are willing to do that. So that's the whole actual background to the Nrisimhalila. So we can celebrate all that as well, right? So we can celebrate, I don't know. Of course, the unfolding of that is, as we know, the Kumaras appear at the gate, seventh gate of Vaikuntha, and they are stopped by Jaya and Vijaya. But there's again some orchestration in the background. So eventually they are cursed by the Kumaras to fall from Vaikuntha, and that's another conversation. And when this happens, it's like Kunta happens in Vaikuntha. No, Kunta sometimes means anxiety. So Vaikuntha is a place of no anxiety, but it seems to be some anxiety. So Bhagavan appears into the scene to see what's going on between Jaya and Vijaya and the Kumaras, and he starts to speak in a way that he takes personal responsibility for the quote-unquote fault of his devotees. So it seems in the beginning that Jaya and Vijaya are at fault, but the way that Bhagavan is talking, like saying, whatever my devotee does, I take that as my own fault, the Kumara starts to wonder who is wrong here, actually. Because if God is taking personal responsibility for these two guys, this means these two guys are pretty loved by him. So who are they? So it is said that at the end of the words of Bhagavan, the poor Kumaras are confused about what did he actually meant. Externally, it seems, they have to fall from Vaikuntha because they offended the Brahmins. But on a deeper level, he's saying, I'm so in love with my devotees that whatever they did, it's like if I do that. So I take personal responsibility. Here I am, showing up myself personally at the gates of Vaikuntha. So we can celebrate that today as well. So many things. We can celebrate that nobody falls from Vaikuntha, technically speaking, also. Again, that's another conversation, but that's worthy of celebration. So the so-called fall from Jaya and Vijaya is in the context of Leela, again, to give pleasure to Bhagavan. And of course, that unfolds the whole Nrisimhalila and Jaya and Vijaya being born as Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu. We can celebrate their appearance as asuras to give Bhagavan the chance of a good fight, whether as Barahadev, as Nrisimhadev. Lots of chance to celebrate that. We can celebrate Prahlad Maharaj's bhakti, Prahlad Maharaj's fearlessness. He was especially known for being fearless, Abhay. So we can celebrate that as well. We can celebrate Nrisimhadev appearing to protect Prahlad, appearing to protect every devotee. No, generally Nrisimhadev is known for being the protector of the devotee. What else? We can protect... We can celebrate, God's tearing apart our illusion of separatedness, as we were talking recently with Ushmal. Turn apart all the fear, turn apart all the defense mechanisms that come from all this sense of separatedness, like he did with Hiranyakashipu, who somehow was the personification of duality, right? He couldn't accept there is a non-dual foundation and God is in the center of all that. He couldn't support to tolerate that. So he wanted something else apart from that. So we can celebrate that, how Bhagavan can tear apart our false sense of existing as separate units without a common center. We can celebrate good conquering over evil. So many ways we can celebrate today. And again, probably because of this, Mahaprabhu will ask to hear this lila over and over again. Every hearing was a new celebration, a new appreciation of lila from one perspective, from another perspective, and from another perspective. So that said, today I'd like to celebrate with you. Hopefully you can join me in the celebration. Nisrimha lila, pralat lila, Nisrimha chaturati, from yet another perspective. You accompany me, even if you don't know what's the perspective?
Yeah, we'll
you are so generous. Wow. You trust me. That's a big commitment. Thank you. So the inspiration came since in a few days we'll be conducting this retreat with Jai and Deva Madhava and all of you. Actually, it's not just a three-man show. It's a whole family show, so to say. So we want to talk about reclaiming our ideals. So somehow the idea came, it was not too much thinking, but it came naturally. We'll be talking about how we can reclaim our ideals as Gaudiya Vaishnava, how to rediscover what it means to be a devotee, how to keep ourselves in this place of eternal students, no? Always open to wonder, open to learning. So personally, I think that one of the main ideals that we need to reclaim and that we need to redeem is our relationship with the material energy. Personally, I think that in big part on a generation level, Gaudiya Vaishnavism is quite like disjointed from matter. We have created somehow an overtly otherworldly presence of God somewhere else, and that has taken to a dysfunctional, to say the least, relationship with an energy which is sacred as material energy, in which God inhabits on every atom and every pore, as we'll see today. So for me today, I'd like to celebrate Nisrimha Chaturdasi from this perspective of how God can be revealed through matter, as it happens in this particular lila, actually, right? In other words, how matter can facilitate the manifestation of the Supreme, how much we can perceive the presence of the divine through Maya Shakti. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Maya Shakti is the greatest Vaishnavi. The other day I was reading also Sanatana Goswami in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, he will refer to material energy as the highest devotee. So be careful how you speak about material energy. You can commit Vaishnavi aparad, right? But we don't want that, of course. So God can manifest from matter, and this happened literally in this lila. That's what we are celebrating today. Nisrimhadeva appeared from a piece of rock, from a pillar, God appeared. Showing with that, I am there. I am everywhere. If you have the eyes to see. If we somehow receive Prahlad's vision, so to say, as we will see. When someone asks, where is God? The actual reply was, where is he not? Like the other day we were talking with the devotees, with some devotees from New Zealand, and someone was presented. Sometimes I asked, Krishna, where are you? And the reply was, wrong question. He's everywhere. The actual question is, where I am? Where am I? He's everywhere. Where am I? He's present everywhere. Am I present to his presence? That's the actual question. That's the actual introspection that we're invited to. It's not so much, where is Krishna? He's everywhere. There's not a place he's not. Where are we? Maybe that's a question we should ask. So we'll try to reflect a little bit today on that, and not only today, but also tomorrow, because tomorrow we'll celebrate the appearance of Sri Radha Raman, which somehow seems to manifest in a very similar pattern than Nrisimhadev, right? Appearing from a quote-unquote rock, Bhagavan in its full splendor, so to say. So we will share a few words today, tomorrow, like an extended reflection also connected to our retreat this weekend. So one main point here is that the divine is transcendent. This is a very, I don't want to be too theological, philosophical, complicated today, but a few complications I will present, but I hope it's not too much. God is transcendent and God is immanent at the same time. You follow these two terms? Transcendent means God is beyond everything or beyond this world, but immanent means God is fully present in this world, both at the same time. And of course, for our dualistic mind, it's like, that's not possible. It has to be one or the other. Well, we are talking about Krishna here, so both are possible. He is beyond the realm of matter, and he is fully present in the realm of matter as well. He's the, like the, in Latin they will call God coincidentia oppositorum, the coincidence of all opposites. That's how God is defined sometimes. Coincidence of opposites. Wow. So what's opposite for us, it finds perfect reconciliation in the divine. That something is contradictory for us doesn't mean it's contradictory for him. We should remain open for that. So Krishna is, for example, you have this expression in English, the Almighty, right, for God? The Almighty, which means like all-powerful. But also God is all vulnerable at the same time. Krishna is very vulnerable in the Leela, very needy for Radha's love in transcendental sense, right? He's how to say, wounded by the arrows of Cupid, falling on the ground, about to die in separation of his beloved. That's vulnerable in a divine sense. So he's almighty, he's all vulnerable. He's inside of everything, he's outside of everything. He's transcendent, and he's immanent as well. So today I'd like to celebrate Nrisimhadev's existence like the God of immanence, so to say. The God that appears from a pillar. If you have the eyes to see, can appear from any particular direction, basically. This is confirmed in Shastra. For example, if you don't believe me, I will provide a few quotations. Brahma Samhita, verse 35, fifth chapter, there Brahmaji is saying that Krishna is fully present in every atom of the material energy. That's an idea to just spend some time with. Just to look at every, at the carpet, at the microphone, at the wall. Every atom pervaded. Every atom an embassy of the Supreme Lord. Well, matter is sacred then. If God is inhabiting every atom, how can I call material world profane? The only profanity is in our eyes. As they say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Profanity is in the eye of the beholder. If you have proper eyes, there is nothing profane. There's one saying, there are only sacred things and desecrated things. But there's nothing profane. Just sacred and desecrated. And you desecrate something when you don't have the eyes to see, basically. So if matter is sacred, we don't need to feel contempt for this world. Rejecting matter is not a prerequisite for bhakti. It's not something that a good devotee should do, right? It's not that the more advanced you are, the more hateful you become towards this world. That probably indicates that you may need some therapy, some profound human healing probably. And there are some unintegrated human chapters in your journey. Not so much that I'm so transcendental that I don't want even to touch this carpet, so to say, right? As we'll see, Prahlad wouldn't agree with that if he had another vision. And interestingly, this fact that God is present everywhere, this is proved in so many ways. The other day I was reading a book on quantum mechanics. I like to read a few stuff. And quantum mechanics basically confirmed the same thing indirectly, but they will say basically that everything on the atomic level is vibrating, at various sonic frequencies. So everything is vibrating. Everything is a song, basically. If you want to become a little bit poetic from quantum mechanics, everything is dancing in some particular frequency. So atoms are singing and vibrating. I mean, it's to our eyes, it's not moving, it's fixed. That's not true. That's your perception of that. But matter is alive. It's alive in its own way. Sometimes inert matter, well, the most living person of all is in every atom. So how can you call matter dead? It has its own way of being alive, basically. So every atom is dancing and singing at its own frequency. Well, we will say our God is a dancer and a singer. He's in every atom, and every atom is dancing and singing. It kind of makes sense, right? So basically, that's our idea. And that's what we find in today's celebration of Om Nrsimha Chaturdasi, as we know. Now, eventually, as I mentioned, when Prahlad is somehow confronting his father lovingly, but confronting his father with truth-telling, Hiranyakashipu cannot conceive of anyone else but him as being the all-in-all, the foundation of existence. And Prahlad is having deep compassion for his father, trying to show, to point him the actual center of reality. And eventually, Hiranyakashipu is asking Prahlad, so as I say, where is your God? Where is your Bhagavan? And Prahlad is an Uttam Bhagavat. Prahlad is a devotee of the highest rank, which means someone who sees everything in Krishna and Krishna in everything. That's the definition of the Bhagavat and of the highest devotee. And when he's asked, where is God? Again, he has a problem to reply to the question because there is not a place where he's not finding him. Confirmed, right? So where is your God? And where is he not? He was so present to God's presence, that God's omnipresence, that he's omnipresent and we are omni-absent generally. That's generally the case, no? That's why we say, where is God? I don't feel here, I don't believe. That speaks about your omni-absence, no? The degree of omni-absence. Because I mean, if someone is omnipresent, you have to be really distracted not to perceive that person at all. If you say he's only in one place, okay, it may be more difficult to find you, but if he's everywhere, oh my gosh, right? Omni-absence, right? That's what we're trying to get cured from. The supreme distraction. Now, Kali Yuga is the age of distraction, so to say. And unfortunately, sometimes distraction becomes the norm. Sometimes you know where you should focus, be present to, and you get distracted. But you know, okay, I got distracted. I'll go back to my presence. But sometimes you get so distracted that you forget that distraction is distraction, and that becomes reality. At that point, you become omni-absent, as we were talking. And the omnipresence of God is like, it sounds like a myth or something like that. But we are living a myth in that sense of the term, right? So again, Prahlad says, where is he not? And properly so, Nrsimhadeva appears to confirm Prahlad Maharaj's words. He appears from a pillar, showing, literally he appears from a pillar. We are not saying here poetically, God inhabits every atom of creation. He appeared from a pillar. So of course, that's a very unique appearance of Bhagavan. It is said by some acharyas that after his Nrsimha avatar, Bhagavan decided, because at the end of the Lila, as we know, after all is said and done with Hiranyakashipu and so on, Prahlad Maharaj is praying for his father, expressing some compassion for him. And Nrsimhadev wonders, wow, how sweet, how this young kid is expressing his love for his father. That's a very interesting feeling. I don't know what that is, because I was born from a pillar. So in one sense, I don't have a father. No. That's why we don't call Nrsimhadev Stamba Nandana, not the son of a pillar. Krishna's known as Jasoda Nandana and Devaki Nandana. But so it is said that from that moment on, Nrsimhadev said, from now on, all my avatars will be, I will have my mommy and daddy, no? So I can fully taste Vatsalya Bhav. But in one sense, we can make the case for all that we have said so far, that he was born from a pillar, he was born from matter, he was born from Mother Earth in the form of a pillar. So there is a mother there. Interestingly, the word matter and mother are almost the same. And whomever has a dysfunctional relationship with their mother, good luck. No, you won't have a good relationship with anything else. So if matter is our mother and we don't have a good relationship with mom, that won't set a good standard for the rest of our lives, so to say. So it's very important that we make peace with material energy, so to say. There's not to need to be at war, like if matter is some I don't know, evil entity that is trying to make us fall and projecting this type of like Satan-like ideas on Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Again, Maya Shakti is a servant of Krishna. We're serving Krishna probably way better than we are, at least in my case. So we have to learn from her. So in this way, the point we want to make is this. No? God is in everything, and everything is in God. That's called panentheism. Again, a few complicated words with your permission. Not pantheism, but panentheism, which means everything in God. Krishna says that in the Gita 6:30. Yamam pasyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pasyati, and so on. He says, when you see everything in me and me in everything, for someone who sees everything in me and me in everything, I'm never lost to that person never is never lost to me. So that's panentheism in the Bhagavad Gita. Everything in God, God in everything. That's a Chintya Veda Veda Tattva, basically. Everything is God, non-different from God, and yet there is some difference. Paradoxical bipolarity. That's how we can call a Chintya Veda Veda Tattva. Bipolarity of the good one. All right, just in case. So one sense of the achintya, abheda, abheda combination, abhed means non-different. So non-different, from that side of the achintya, abheda, abheda, we can say matter is God. There's a place to say that. And of course, someone might say, yeah, it's God, but also there's the other side of the equation, veda, which is diversity, and it's an energy of God. Yeah, but hold enough time with the non-different side. We need some grounding in non-dual foundation in our tradition. We are a non-dual tradition. Everything is connected to God. God is in everything. He is in everything. Everything is in Him. And interestingly enough, I mean, we are talking about Nisrimhadev today, Prahlad Maharaj. I like to share a few verses where Prahlad Maharaj, in the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj, when he's trying to pacify Nisrimhadev. And interestingly, many of the verses he used to pacify Nisrimhadev are related to how matter and God basically are one. So I feel some of these verses are very appropriate to what we are celebrating and talking today. Mostly they will be from the Advaita side of the equation. So for example, Prahlad says, all of this come from 7th canto, chapter 9, in case you want them to check. God alone is the universe, he says. So that's a way of seeing the universe as that. God places the universe within himself. This universe is God's body. And Bhagavan is the air, fire, earth, sky, water, subtle elements, vital force, the senses, the heart, pure consciousness, and grace as well. Like God is everything. He's emphasizing that side of the equation. It's not everything, but it's an important one. And he then concludes his prayer to Nisrimhadev saying, oh, great one, you alone are all things. There's nothing at all other than you. Again, some of us may feel this sounds like Mayavad. This sounds like impersonalism. That's in the Bhagavatam, right? So we have to understand in which context the Bhagavatam is saying all this. No? So it's trying to emphasize this side of the Achintya Veda Veda equation. Then we have verses emphasizing the difference, the diversity. But it's important that we learn to see matter as inseparable somehow from the divine, because nothing is separated from him. When we see something separated from God, the problem begins. Bhayam dutiya avinivesyat asya. That's the tragic line of the Bhagavatam. When you become absorbed in dvitiya, in seeing two things, one thing and something else separated from the other, game over. Bhayam, fear starts and all that comes from there. So we need to see reality integrated as a whole. So on that foundation, we'll be separated, protected from the illusion of separatedness. That is basically what keeps us as conditioned souls, right? And not only this lila of Nisrimhadev is trying to to show us the sacredness of matter, the whole Bhagavatam is doing that. For example, if you pay attention to what the Bhagavatam says and the context, for example, the very first series of instruction from Sukadev Goswami to Maharaj Pariksit are the Virat Rupa. That's the very first thing that Sukadev Goswami says. That's basically how the Bhagavatam starts. Teaching, see the world as a form of God. Then we talk about Rasa Leela and all the other stuff. First, learn to see the world as divine. If you don't pass that test, it may be difficult that you understand other lessons, so to say. This is a preliminary discussion. And in many other conversations, Sutta Goswami with sages of Nine Misaranya, Maitreya Rishi with Vidura, even Krishna with Brahma, the beginning of their conversations, generally, if you pay attention, begin with discussions about the material world and the sacredness of the world and God present in the world. Then they go to more, if you will, esoteric things. Although that's pretty esoteric, if you will. So that's an important point. I mean, that's not something, again, you understand the main points of a book by understanding what are the topics, among other things, are repeated over and over again. What say at the beginning of the book and so on. So in our tradition, that's very, very clearly made. For example, how we measure adhikar in our tradition. When we say, okay, there are three levels of eligibility in general. Of course, there are many. It's not like, okay, I was a Kanishtha Adhikar and Adhikari, and last weekend I became a Madhyam Adhikar. And in 3 months, it's not like that. Right? There are unlimited levels, but they are kind of summarized in three: Kanishtha, Madhyam, and Uttam. So, which are the symptoms of those three, according to the Bhagavad? And if you pay attention, the symptoms of those three, which is another way of saying how you measure your progress, is how much you are able to detect God's presence in the world. That's it. That's I'm quoting the Bhagavatam. I'm not coming with the Padmanabha or Samhita here, right? The three main verses of the Bhagavatam describing Kanishtha, Madhyam, and Uttam describe advancement can be measured according to how much you are capable of perceiving God's presence in the world. Because why? The Kanishtha will perceive God is only in the altar, right? Curtains are closed, God disappeared. Krishna is somewhere else. I cannot see him anymore. The Madhyam is perceiving God in the altar and in other living beings. And the Uttam is perceiving God everywhere. But it's interesting that the way to measure advancement is according to how much we are able to be present to God's presence in the world. So again, that for me speaks about how important it is that we learn to find, discover the divine in what seems to be non-divine. If matter seems profane, just that only speaks about how little we have discovered Krishna here, so to say, and how we insist of making him an otherworldly person, how much we are pushing him to the afterlife, right? To the afterlife. Okay, Krishna, someday we will meet in Leela. Someday we'll, and he's the most immediate person that can be. So this Uttam, Prahlad Maharaj was an Uttam Bhagavat. Prahlad Maharaj was someone who saw Krishna everywhere. Again, he will say, where is he not? And regarding this highest devotee, Rupa Goswami will say in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, such a devotee is dear to everyone. And I will say such a devotee is dear to everyone because that person no longer is a public threat because he sees God everywhere. So he will treat everything accordingly. As much as I'm not seeing God, I'm dangerous. As much as not seeing God in you, I won't treat you accordingly. And I'm a public danger. If I'm not seeing God anywhere, you can surmise what happens there. No? So if someone sees God everywhere, that person is a blessing to the world. If someone doesn't see the divine anywhere and sees this world as profane, worthy of exploitation and control and analysis and manipulation, it's just for us to figure it out. Well, that's where we are now, starting to contemplate the possibility of human extinction. Tomorrow we'll talk more about that. But my point is Prahlad Maharaj is an example of that, going back to the Nrisimha Leela. He's seen a pillar with such love, with such presence, that God appeared from that pillar. Krishna couldn't but appear in that form. course, Prahlad's Ishtadev is not Nrsimhadev. Prahlad's Ishtadev is Krishna. But Krishna appeared in a form suitable to the need of the moment, so to say. He needed some specific protection. Again, some good fighting was waiting there, remember? But he appeared. Prahlad's bhakti in one way. Prahlad's eyes, premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena, his premanetra, his eye of love, made Krishna appear from between the atoms, inside from the atoms of the pillar, basically. So Prahlad is an example of that. Now, someone who has so much love for God that it makes matter a portal, so to say, material energy becomes a portal that reveals the divine. That's mainly what we are celebrating today and the main point that I wanted to make today from this perspective. And one thing more, I have a few minutes. Buddhadeep had a clock there. So also Prahlad Maharaj is over and over again mentioned as an example of this quality in Sanskrit called abhayatva. Abhayatva, which basically means fearlessness, right? He will go through so many tribulations and problems but he was completely Rakshisha Atiti Vishvaso Goptritui Varana. Krishna will protect me, he's maintaining me, I have full faith, no problem. But so much obstacles. Sometimes some acharyas say that one confidential reason why Mahaprabhu wanted to hear Prahlad Maharaj so many times is because he was in Radha Bhav, and Radha has to go through so many obstacles on a daily basis to meet with Krishna. So by listening to all the obstacles that Prahlad Maharaj is going through with full faith and trust, he's nourishing his Radha Bhav, and how true Radha is going through all that to meet Krishna as well. But that's another conversation. Let's go back for a minute. So abhayatva means fearlessness. So Prahlad Maharaj is kind of the murti of abhayatva, fearlessness. No? Srila Prabhupada, of course, was also known as Abhayacharan. He kept his name, no? His birth name, for different reasons, but he embodied that, no? Abhay, fearlessness. And I'd like to conclude with a few words and not to take the direction out from the celebration of Nrsimhadev, but on a more personal tone, but also I think it's an interesting point to make. Because today it happens also to be my 15th sannyas anniversary. So it was on Nrsimhadev. It's a whole story behind that and no time to tell it today. I mean, I was supposed to receive sannyas a few days after, but the person who gave me sannyas at the time was like, oh, but today is Nrsimhadev appearance day, you know, so. So, and we were in a place that another state of the country. So the Danda was waiting in Buenos Aires in Argentina. The fire was waiting there. But Nrsimha Chaturdasi was that day in somewhere else. And he asked like to other sannyasis, do you have some new sannyas cloth? And that sannyasi had happened to have new sannyas cloth. But generally, I don't travel with new sannyas cloth. And this friend of mine told me, I never traveled with new sannyasi clothes, but I happened to have them. So I ended up receiving mantra and name in a garage, very unusual place. That was very interesting. I appreciated that. So that was a day like today, 15 years ago. So, and I always connected the point, no? Like, okay, today's the stream of Chaturdasi. And the one who really steals the show in the Nrsimha Lila is Prahlad Maharaj. And the quality that mostly steals the show is his abhayatva, or fearlessness. And the quality that is most emphasized in the scriptures for sannyasi is abhayatva, is fearlessness. No? Sannyasi should be fearless. Of course, what does it mean? We have many ideas. But for me, in big part means you have to be willing to confront the unknown and the dimensions of uncertainty on a daily basis, and confront unlimited potential, which means unlimited possibilities that are unknown, and that can make us nervous. So to be okay with that. So Prahlad Maharaj showed that, no? Prahlad Maharaj showed complete trust, complete fearless, just to go on the right. So in the same way that Prahlad Maharaj didn't show any type of fear from Hiranyakashipu, from anything, the same way sannyasis is expected to not be afraid, Sannyasi in the Bhakti tradition, especially, is not someone who should be afraid of this world. No, sannyasi is not about escaping from this world, no? Or rejecting this world, or dismissing or condemning this world. No? Out of fear. And that's not the idea. That's not abhay. If I run from this world out of fear, that's the opposite of abhayatva. So actual sannyas in the Gaudiya line in the Bhakti tradition has to do with engage with matter without fear, fearless, in a fearless way, because if I acknowledge that matter is sacred, that is the greatest Vaishnavi, that is serving Bhagavan better than I am, I mean, there's no reason to fear. There's total reason to take shelter in such a personality and to engage with matter in a sacred way. That's what we will call yukta vairagya, which basically means proper renunciation. We are not renouncing matter, we are just renouncing the wrong eye through which we are seeing matter. That's what I remember, it was last year, I told it a few times last year, in Alachua I met with Radhanath Maharaj, and we ended up talking like 4 hours or something. That was an interesting conversation. At one point he quotes something that Prabhupada told, a situation that he was, I think, witnessing. A devotee came to Srila Prabhupada telling him, Srila Prabhupada, for your sake, I'm willing to reject everything. And Prabhupada replied, the only thing you need to reject is the idea that you need to reject anything. I'll repeat for a second time for better impact. And Prabhupada replied, the only thing you need to reject is the idea that you need to reject anything. That you need to reject. Once you reject that wrong idea, there's nothing to reject. There's everything to serve and honor and venerate because everything is sacred. So that yukta vairagya. And I like to conclude with a brief quote from this famous composition of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in this regard. Vaishnav ke, sometimes called Dushraman, which is the first few lines of this song. I know that Deva Madhava's Guru Maharaj likes a lot this song. He wrote some commentary on that. There are a few things, very interesting things that Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta says. I will just quote a few from verses 12 to 14 in this connection. How when we relate to matter without fear, with proper renunciation, so to say, renouncing what we actually need to renounce, and the rest is sacredness. So he says, when we are devoid of selfish attachment and endowed with the ability to see things in relation to the divine, all sense objects are then directly perceived as being God himself. Everything involved in the life of such a devotee represents God's personal spiritual opulence as manifest in the world of matter. In fact, those things that are used in relationship to the sweet absolute are objects belonging directly to the transcendental realm. Srila Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Ki Jai. So he's saying that. I'm repeating it with lots of inspiration, of course, but he's saying that. So when you have the proper relationship, all sense objects appears as Krishna himself. Imagine. That's what made Prahlad to say, where is he not? Every atom is speaking about. So everything is related to Krishna. That's what Sambandha Gyan constitutes. Sambandha Gyan is the initial knowledge that guides our bhakti practice. And Sambandha means Sambandha. Bandha means bonded, connected, and Sam means everything. So Sambandha Gyan is the knowledge that teaches us how everything exists in connection with Krishna, how nothing is separated. On the foundation of that knowledge comes Abhideya, comes the practice of bhakti. If you practice bhakti without that foundation, it won't be bhakti proportionate to how much you lack that foundation. It will be a separatistic sense of devotion. So anyhow, a few words I want to share today with you, trying to honor Srimhadev's appearing and trying to counteract somehow or other I personally feel that we have been engaged historically in some form of philosophical bullying to the material energy, so to say.
Bullying?
Bullying, right. So enough is enough, so to say, right? And Nrsimha Mahadev has come today to say that, appearing from a pillar and showing that the full divine presence can manifest from any corner, every direction. So we have a few minutes. If there is any commentary, any questions, something you might like to share, Ananda group.
I was thinking about, because you described that the qualification of Uttama Adhikari is that they have this vision. And I was reflecting that this vision is not, it's not a cheap thing. Just like, just like to see Krishna personally is not a cheap thing. Mm-hmm. To see Krishna everywhere is not a cheap thing. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, like, you know, that vision can often be cheapened, and it's often claimed, oh yeah, you know, I can see God everywhere. And then I was thinking about that, and I was going to ask kind of about the dynamic of that sahaja, really. And then also the dynamic, you know, on the other end, it's also dangerous. So just this kind of the dynamic of the extremes. I'm not really sure the question there, but
I get the point. I think I get the point. Yeah, a few things. One, of course, when I say that the highest devotee sees Krishna everywhere, I won't take that literally. Also, I won't say that he's seeing literally Krishna playing the flute in every atom, because that can be a little bit like too much, right? Probably yourself starts to get a little bit concerned, like that may be too much. But I will say seeing Krishna everywhere means they are experiencing God's presence everywhere, which is, and they will see Krishna. Of course, there is darshan, specific darshan, but it doesn't mean that it has to be 24/7, non-stop, every atom. That's too much. But there is a realization and an experience of God's presence everywhere. That's for sure. Now going to your point. Yeah, I mentioned that in radical personalism. I say, okay, we are saying the highest devotee sees Krishna everywhere or perceives his presence. And someone said, well, but I'm not the highest devotee. So how much can I try to imitate that? Of course, I'm not prescribing that, because you cannot imitate that, basically. It's not like, okay, I will switch to like Uttam Bhagavat mode and I will perceive God's presence. It's not happening. But at least my point is, you should know if the highest, if the most enlightened person has this vision, that means that's how reality should be looked upon. The way an enlightened person sees reality, that's how reality looks like. Through the eyes of that person. So I don't have that vision, but I will guide my life on the basis of that idea. Although I'm not there, in theory, I will accept that, and I will pursue that realization, not imitate that, but also not discard it because I'm not there, but just knowing. And from many ways, it makes sense that, yeah, God is everywhere, although I'm not seeing it yet, but he's there. So I will orient my life and practice on those principles, on that foundation. Even though it's theory, I'm trying to make that's sadhana bhakti, basically. Sadhana bhakti is, sometimes this idea came once. Sadhana bhakti, of course, you can define sadhana bhakti in so many ways. One of them is sadhana bhakti is a theoretical appreciation of the reality of Bhava Bhakti. You cannot.
Theoretical appreciation.
You cannot be there. You cannot be in Bhava or in Prem, but you can, in theory, appreciate what that means. Study that as much as that can be studied, but get a glimpse of that and appreciate that and try to orient your present life toward that goal. So I will say in this connection, not to end in the extreme of sahaja thing, like, yeah, I'm seeing God every. I mean, you can say it. Everyone can say so many one-liners, but at the end of the day, you have to walk your talk. And I mean, you can say I see God everywhere, and be sure that in a few minutes you will be put to test to see how much that's going on, and everyone will see what's your reply.
How much you don't see.
Omni absence, as we were talking before.
That's a real word. I never heard that word.
I never heard either. It came today to me.
Word, yeah.
Yeah. God is omnipresent, but we don't feel he's omnipresent. That means we are omniabsent, basically.
I looked it up. It's a...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we don't want to go to either extremes, right? Because there are two forms of sahaja, again. Sahaja means I rush into something which is too high for me and I become an imitator and do a cheap talk of the highest realities. Or I am in some stage and I'm ready to pass to the next stage and I deny myself to do that in the name of false humility. And I remain in a forced kindergarten. That's another way of sahaja. It's a way of evading, not accepting where you are or where you should be. Whether you want to go too high or whether you want to remain too low when you're ready for more. So in this connection, this idea is not like, oh, that's the vision of the highest devotee. So I won't pursue that. I remain seeing matter as despicable because I'm not the highest devotee. So I have a right to do that. No, that's not. Or, yeah, everything is sacred and I see God everywhere. No, neither of those. It's just I, in theory, acknowledge this principle of sacredness in matter. I mean, if we have a little sensitivity and connect with nature and this world, we will feel there is something important here, to say the least. Then assisted from all the things that the Shastra is saying about God's presence in every atom, and this, you can make a theoretical case for, okay, I have to redeem and reclaim my relationship with matter, and then that theoretical appreciation orientation, we pursue a realization of that. Yeah, that's how I'm trying to do it myself, basically. I'm not the Nutan Bhagavat, just in case. I'm not seeing Krishna everywhere. I just know that he's everywhere. Yeah. You were raising your hand.
Well, I was curious, Maharaj, because everyone wants to feel like they're making progress.
Yeah.
And what you just described seems like sambandha. Rather than looking for my new orientation in my Abhideya or my Prayojana, checking in on my sambandha, which is kind of the thing that we assume we have already. And it, as you're presenting, it's ironically maybe the thing that we've neglected for too long, and that's cost us the other Abhideya and Prayojana elements.
Yes. I mean, I don't want to enter into smashing Swami mood, because it's not my mood, but if I will enter into that space, it will be in that direction, into not smashing anyone, but just emphasizing how much we take for granted that we know certain things. And that's one of the worst possible tragedies, because you take for granted, I know Krishna consciousness and I get the basic stuff and now I move on. Let's go to Abhideya and I want my prayojan as soon as possible. And your sambandha, it's not even in place at all, no. So, and for me, it's so important, probably because in Argentina, where I'm from and where I live for most years, or main study, there was Madan Mohan, Radha Madan Mohan. Madan Mohan is the deity of sambandha. For me, sambandha was always, I was kind of obsessed with sambandha, but also because I felt if sambandha, which means this, sometimes we call it conceptual orientation, what is what, who is who, and understanding everything, if that's in place, everything else follows organically, accordingly. Again, for me, Abhideya is the natural outcome of sambandha.
Yeah.
That's how it should happen. It's not like I have to do bhakti and pressure. No, you receive such a sambandha that fills you with wonder and astonishment, and you're captivated by the beauty and the and then you want to you translate the translation of that is, how do I offer myself to this? And that's what we call Abhideya. And that's what brings, as a result, actual prayojan, actual fruit of bhakti. So yeah, I will be, and I'm not here telling anything to anyone personally in general, and that's to me first, but I will recommend always being very careful of not being so sure that we have everything figured out. I think that's like basic humility, right? And yeah, we need to revise our sambandha, reclaim it, redeem it. And if sambandha is in place, Abhideya follows in place, prayojan follows. In that sense, sambandha is a synonym. Synonym?
Synonymous.
Sambandha is synonymous with prayojan. Because you have proper sambandha, you will have proper prayojan. You don't have proper sambandha. You don't have a proper idea of what is what, proper orientation. Mm. That's what Prabhupada will say. You start with the one, all the other zeros give some value, or you start adding numbers. But if you add the first number wrong, the end result will be wrong. So basically, that's the meaning. If you don't have a proper sambandha in place, again, if you think this world is crap and you relate to matter from a dysfunctional place, that won't take you to a proper, to a healthy practice of bhakti, and what to speak of the result of that. And to be honest, I've sometimes, and that's sad, that breaks my heart, but I've seen devotees practicing for 30, 40 years that, with all respect, but in many cases, they're very dysfunctional in many ways. And my point is, again, if you do something with the wrong orientation, the more you do it, the worse. You follow my point? It's not that the more I do something, the better, no matter what. If there is not proper orientation and conception, the more you do something wrong, the worse it gets. If I get accustomed to chanting my japa while watching Netflix, if I do that for 40 years, that's even worse than if I only did it for a weekend. You follow my point? Externally, it seems I'm a devotee, I'm chanting, but what's the orientation internally? What's the sense of relationship? From which place I'm doing all that? That will determine the actual fruit. Palena farichite. You can judge a tree by its fruits. So again, this is not to criticize anyone, condemn anyone, but just to pay proper attention to revise our foundations. Now, sambandha is kind of the foundation of the whole temple. You can make the temple, and it may even seem beautiful, but if the foundation is not good, some wind comes and collapse. But if the foundation is strong, it may take more time, but everything is sustainable. We want to keep everything sustainable. Vishnu is the god of sustenance, and we are Vaishnavas, so Vishnu is the god of sustainability. As Vaishnavas, we should represent our deity, making our practice, our bhakti project, sustainable, and that requires a fair sambandha foundation. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for your time, for your presence. Srinishma Pati Turdasi ki jai, Vishim Bhagavan ki jai, Bhakta Prahlad Maharaj ki jai, Gaur Premananda Sadhu Sangha ki jai. And tomorrow morning, which time? 8 in the morning? We'll be talking on the appearance of Sri Radha Ramanji. Somehow continue our reflection on this in the context of the appearance of this probably arguably the most important detail in all Vrindavan. So Sadhu Sangha ki jai. Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhyaivacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo. Ananta koti vaishnava vrinda ki jai.